CliffCentral.com.
I'm Adrian Groenewald, and with me Alison Nyandu, Richard Angus, and our special guest today, the USB Ed expert, as I said a moment ago, Hans Kohlmann. And last week we spoke about measuring customer experience. You can get that podcast. This week is all about procurement planning and sourcing. So Hans Kohlmann, he's an industrial engineer by profession with 26 years corporate experience. And he's now been self-employed for the past 16 years, and he's also a part-time lecturer and facilitator with USB Ed. Hans, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So we've got an interesting conversation, very important one today. So we're going to let you kick off, Richard and Hans, bring to life this topic, which maybe SMEs don't always see the importance of it, but we've got to convince them, don't we?
We certainly will try to bring it to life.
Yeah, Adrian, I think the one of the biggest things that you deal with in a business is just pulling together the array of issues, getting your business running from a procurement perspective. And one of those is this critical element of actually managing the procurement process. So Hans, what exactly is procurement management, and what are the benefits from planning and sourcing properly in a procurement process for a business out there? Let's just define, you know, what we're talking about here for a moment.
Well, I have to start off by saying that when I was introduced as an expert, I was a bit scared because a lot of the answers I'm going to give you will probably sound very common, very
obvious,
general.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the case with procurement management. Procurement management is indeed about making sure that the processes that delivers supplies to your organization, whether it's a service or goods, that those processes are well managed in order to provide those services or goods on time, the right quantity, in good condition, etc. So that is basically the purpose of doing procurement management.
Okay. So, I mean, what's one of the first issues that one should be considering when you talk about the whole principle of procurement itself? Where's the starting point? Because it sounds like quite a nebulous issue that you've got to deal with.
Yeah. For me, the starting point is always your customer. If you want to make sure that your procurement processes are operating as they should be operating, they should be focused on the customer's requirements.
Okay, so what you're telling me is, I mean, when I think of procurement, I think of what I'm buying, but you're telling me to focus on my customer and not me. So that's a bit of a contradiction in terms. So you're saying focus on what my customer need is and then kind of push that back into what I now need to go and procure to meet the need.
Yes, exactly. And based on your customer profile, that will determine a lot of the aspects of your procurement management processes. If you have mass customer base, then obviously your procurement process is quite different as to whether you're running a boutique hotel or a boutique guest house.
Okay. Alice?
A question for Hans, you know, following through with what Richard was saying. Who's responsible for this process? Who should be managing this? I mean, because obviously bigger companies would have what's called a procurement officer or something like that. But if I'm a startup person, as the founder CEO, is it my job, you know, as the founder of the business to be dealing with this sort of nebulous issue?
You quite correctly pointed out that it depends on the size of your business. If indeed you are in a startup environment without a huge organization behind you, then it becomes your responsibility to manage the procurement processes.
And at what stage of the business development does issues around procurement come through? When should this become part of the language within the business?
It very much depends on what industry you're in. Procurement is basically getting goods and services into your organization. So if you are in an organization that's making very seldomly used goods or services, then your procurement may be far more complex than if you're in a normal organization where the goods or the services are readily available all over the country.
And is it a linear process? Because I'm just thinking now, if you're thinking procurement on one hand, you should also be thinking distribution on the other.
Correct.
How to get the goods to the people's hands.
Procurement is very closely linked to logistics, which is physically getting the stuff to your location and physically moving the stuff to wherever you need to move them to. And it is also about risk management, making sure that you manage the potential risks of not having the stuff when you need it. And as I said before, it's about contract management and making sure your customers are happy.
Okay, so it sounds like we've got a whole lot of stuff there that we perhaps need to dig into a little deeper. So how you choose a supplier? I mean, how do you go about that process? I mean, that sounds like it's a critical part of the process in terms of what makes a good supplier and what makes a bad supplier. Let's perhaps contrast those two.
Before we do that, I would like to point out that your first decision as a business, new business owner, is whether you do indeed procure the services or goods, or whether you make them yourself. So do I outsource or do I do it myself? And that decision is very much based on volume. If, for instance, you are a training provider and you're doing the same course over and over and over every week of the year, then it pays you to employ a person to do that for you. And in other words, do it in-house. If you are a training provider who provides courses of a great variety, in other words, a course only happens, let's say, once a month, then it makes sense to outsource the provision of that training to your organization. So it's a very important decision, first of all. Do you do it yourself or do you outsource the service or the supply of goods?
And by that decision, I guess it also is a function of volume and price sensitivity and commoditization. I mean, the reality is it might be very easy to order in and buy something in because it's commodity in nature, or on the flip side, it might be so specialized that that's your, let's call it, unique selling proposition, that only you can manufacture this item and that's what makes you unique.
Yes, and there's also another factor, which is location.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, for instance, let's say in the middle of the desert, there's very little that you could actually outsource. You need to make sure that all of the stuff that you need is being manufactured right there. Some mining organizations, they don't outsource their maintenance because they're in a remote area. They employ their own maintenance staff and they do their own maintenance. So location is also very important.
Okay, so the location and the ability to acquire services from a procurement perspective,
correct,
logistically, is also a driver.
Correct.
Okay, so let's get back to, so what makes you choose a supplier?
Well, a supplier, as far as I'm concerned, should be chosen based on his ability to meet your quality requirements. Those quality requirements that have been specified or obtained from your customers, they will first of all control what kind of supplier you're going to be using. The supplier has to be able to supply the goods of that quality. Secondly, it's about reliability of delivery, making sure that the goods are delivered on time, at the right place, in the right quantity. And then there are very many other things. It's about visibility. Do you know what the supplier is doing? Are his processes accessible to you? There's integration of processes. For instance, if you're in a larger organization, does your computer systems talk to the supplier's computer systems in terms of payment, in terms of stock levels, that kind of stuff? So there's a whole range of things. Then, of course, also you need to consider broad-based black economic empowerment. Depending on the size of your organization, you need to look at the rating of the supplier.
It's interesting, Hans, that you talk about quality. I would have thought you know, price is quite key there, and also in the volume in terms of what that supplier could bring. Hence, I don't think we can talk about procurement without talking about China, for example. In your view, what makes China an attractive, you know, place for procurement? Is it really quality?
I think Chinese procurement is very powerful in that it supplies goods at an affordable price. But they also have a good customer's perspective. If the customer wants a high-quality product, China can make it too, okay, at a higher price. But they do cater for different customers.
And do you have to worry about ethics? I mean, we had a case where Apple, you know, was, you know, hold over calls for some of the practices of some of their suppliers out in China. How can you go about making sure that your supplier is ethical? They don't pay slave wages, for example, sweatshops.
Yeah, you need to investigate that kind of stuff. If you're now obviously talking about you being quite a big business, not a small guest house or so, mm-hmm, then you need to do a lot of research. I have a story to tell in that somebody asked for a subcontractor to do some construction work, and during the tendering process, a Chinese company got the go-ahead to do it, and they thought, as a quality check, let us go to China and see what this company has done before to ensure quality. Mm-hmm. They went to China, they looked at what this company had done, they came back and they awarded the contract to China. The project was a disaster, and they then found out that what they were shown in China was not actually what the company had done, was what another company had done. So it's difficult to actually...
Yeah, I was going to say...
So due diligence in this case is very important.
Very important. Ethics is very important. If you're a big organization, you do not want to be associated with suppliers that are dubious.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Hans, I mean, you talk about the quality issues and what you need to deal with there. I mean, my experience with particularly places like China is that you can get anything produced... And it happens worldwide. It's not just China. You can get anything produced to a certain quality standard if you stipulate what the standard is up front. So having that match between, let's call it a quality standard or an international recognized standard of production, and what you're asking for, is that a critical part? I mean, I guess almost let's call it defining your quality requirements up front in terms of what you're procuring is a critical part of the procurement process.
Yeah. Richard, you're now touching on the issue of contract management.
Okay.
Where the contract management is usually split between two areas, contract administration and until the contract gets signed, and then contract management, which is after the contract has been signed. Mm. I see it as one process with various stages. The contract administration, getting the right contract in place, is absolutely important. People don't tend to not read their contracts. People tend to ignore the contract. Oh, well, I can do whatever he tells me to do. If only they could read the contract, they may be a little bit more careful in supplying goods and services. Now, in the contract contents, there should be the obvious things such as price, delivery dates and all that sort of stuff, and the quality that you've mentioned. But there should also be a clause on how to manage when there's a problem. How do we manage when problems occur during the course of the contract? And that's very often not in the contract.
Well, I must say my personal experience from a procurement perspective is you often get these bigger suppliers out there. And I mean, I've had the beauty of getting in the logistics space. We were procuring from a logistics company or using them in our procurement process. And the contract arrived, and it was a 37-page terms and conditions in font size 4. And, you know, double column, I mean, it was almost impossible to read, never mind, you know, interpret. And it just made me so aware of some of the challenges that you deal with at a procurement level, because the reality is if you don't understand every little thing in those contracts, the reality is that the supplier on the other side can use that to, you know, create the wiggle room that they need to walk away from the obligations that you've placed them under. And particularly if they're bigger than you, so if you're procuring from a bigger company, the reality is they can just give you the runaround with their contract. So you need to make sure that you read your contracts really carefully. I think it's something that particularly small companies kind of go, well, hey, if I'm dealing with a big company, you know, they'll do the right thing. Understand that those big companies employ a fleet of lawyers to help set up their procurement and terms and conditions of sale, and they make sure that they're well covered. So you need to do the same and make sure that you've covered the risks that are relevant to your business.
Yes, and I also believe, Richard, sorry to interrupt you there, but it's important that you do not depend on somebody having read the contract. In other words, if there are important issues within the contract, have a meeting pre-delivery date or whatever, where you'd explain this to the supplier, where you discuss it with the supplier, where you dig deeper than what the words are saying. You explain to the supplier why you put that in. What are the potential problems that you foresee?
Now, let's just talk for a moment about the potential problem of non-delivery, because that's always out there. You have to deliver for your client. Your suppliers have to deliver for you. What happens when your supplier fails to deliver? And as a consequence of that, there's almost, let's call it, penalties that you incur as a company. I mean, how should you be managing that, let's call it, on delivery risk?
Well, it's typical risk management. You need to have a backup plan. You need to have thought through, as management of the company, what could potentially go wrong and how you will react should that go wrong. If it's a very critical component of your delivery process, then make sure you have a backup available.
The scenario of putting all your eggs in one basket from a procurement perspective, probably not a great one.
What comes to mind was the Kuberg fiasco, where one of the generators failed and the whole Kuberg station was out of power for quite a long time. Reason being that the spares were not readily available. Why were the spares not readily available? Because they were extremely expensive, millions and millions of rand. So the company didn't want to keep those in stock unnecessarily. What they should have done is they should have had an agreement with a supplier of those spares to keep it in stock for them.
Mm.
And thus get it into the country quicker.
So almost a minimum stock holding level requirement. Yeah.
And in our organizations in Africa, especially in rural areas, logistics is even more tricky. And there could be many, many problems with respect to logistics. So you always need to have a backup plan if it's a critical item.
Yeah. In fact, that's one of the things that I've noticed in one of the environments that I do some work in, is the principle of having stock that's specifically almost ring-fenced for a particular contract or client. And it's what they call critical level stock. So it always has to be in stock. And if you use any item from that stock holding, it has to be then ordered from the international provider and replaced immediately. And the whole concept behind it is to make sure that those stockouts are kept to an absolute minimum. And those particular large clients that this company has actually make it a part of their contract with the supplier to say, you have to hold a minimum of X stock for us, and you have to have you know, stuff available within X turnaround times and the likes. It's quite interesting that the logistic elements also play quite heavily here in terms of, it's not just the availability, the availability locally, but how you'd get it, you know. So if you've got stock in Joburg, is that good enough? Because if it's needed in Cape Town, how are you going to get it down there, and how quickly can that happen, etc.? So
The two things there that spring to mind, Richard. The first one is the issue of having stock available. A large company that I worked for, we had one of our major customers on site. We had a storeroom for them. So the storeroom belonged to us, but it was on their site. Mm. And they could continuously withdraw from that storeroom whenever they needed the stock.
Okay.
That's called consignment stock.
Okay. And that would be in the procurement contract, which they have from a supplier perspective.
Correct. The other issue that you brought up is the mode of transport. Now, clearly, different modes of transport are differently priced. The most expensive mode of transport is air, but that's also the quickest. So you, as a manager of a company, and depending on the urgency with which you want the goods, may request your supplier to, instead of bringing it by truck, which they usually do, to now fly up some of the stuff to your organization.
Can I just come in here? I mean, this is all fabulous content and information. In a country where we are promoting SMEs, small enterprises, whom we are supposed to develop as part of our BBBE scorecard, and those small suppliers, eventually we want to migrate them or graduate them to become suppliers. It sounds like these are a lot of issues that can make it a hell of a difficult for a small business to be able to deal with that 37-page contract challenge, you know, to understand every word in there. I want to become a supplier of this big, huge corporate, or to have extra stock available, to be able to... am I right or wrong? It seems like it will be very difficult for a small enterprise to deal with a lot of these issues.
For a small enterprise, it is indeed difficult, but I believe that a big issue in the whole procurement process is collaboration. If the large organization really wants to develop small enterprises, then there must be less of a confrontational attitude and more of a working together kind of attitude.
It's tough because it's capitalists. We're dealing with capitalists that must make money, shareholder value, and now they have to have a conscience and take their time and collaborate and talk to the little SMEs. But that's what the country needs and deserves.
And that is what should be put in place. Mm. Somebody, for instance, should be available for the SME to go to and say, listen, me as an SME, I'm battling a little bit with my trucks. Could you perhaps assist me in letting me borrow one of your trucks?
In fact,
I'll pay you for it.
I think Hans touches on a very important point, collaboration. Because this is the problem with how we develop SMEs in this country. We think it's a space for competition. Yet if we developed this space, everyone wins. There has to be a win-win sort of approach. For example, I'm thinking, I see a lot of SME people go to a local macro. That's where they get their stock. I mean, does that fit the definition of procurement? Yet these guys are hustling through the same, you know, aisles as your normal, you know, customer.
That's their procurement. No, that's very much part of their procurement. When I talk also about collaboration, it's also collaboration between SMEs. So if you're a small SME, let's say in the logistics environment, you deliver stuff to a large organization, then perhaps you should collaborate with some other small SMEs that are in the same field so that if you have a problem, they can assist you and we can form a bigger whole.
Okay. So obviously this is a gospel we have to spread. Well, collaboration.
I think that, I mean, you know, simple things like you say, you see SMEs walking through, you know, procuring in the aisles of macro. The reality is there's probably, if that SME is out there doing that purchasing, you'll probably find they're probably not only purchasing for themselves, knowing how South Africans work, but they're probably buying for two or three other organizations in and around their location. And what they're doing is they're pooling their resources and their transport.
Well, that's collaboration.
And that's the collaboration we're talking about. But, you know, you have to then ask yourself the question, you know, is there a better place where they could be procuring from at a, you know, at a much lower rate? Is that the most effective place? Perhaps it is, given the market that they, you know,
efficiencies, of
and
course,
efficiencies, etc.
That brings us to the whole issue of e-procurement, going onto the internet and seeing what's available where. Which has its own challenges in that what they say on the internet is not what they always deliver, but it is an option which gives you wider access to other sources.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's a statistic that says that probably about 60% of people's shopping is actually happening online ahead of, you know, ahead of the actual purchase. And they may still want to physically go out and physically touch and see and feel. But the reality is that in most cases, they're doing their, let's call it pre-education online. You know, people have often said to me, from a procurement perspective, how important is it to have a web presence? And my answer has always been, if you're not on the web, unfortunately, you don't actually have a presence in the space where people are looking. I mean, reality, most people will look on the internet first nowadays, and then they will follow that with a physical engagement. I mean, the number of times I go to the internet to look for somebody's physical address when I need to go somewhere or do something. I mean, you no longer pick up the phone and phone the company and say, could you please give me your physical address? Yeah, I need to come to a meeting. True. You just go to the internet page and click on contact us and go look for their physical address.
But that again now relates to how big your organization is. If you are a very big corporate, then the whole tendering process sort of gets rid of the process of finding who can do what for you, because you put it out on tender and and the suppliers have the responsibility to either answer or not.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation, which obviously, you know, I can't wait to hear what our SME feature would talk to in terms of this topic.
Yeah,
because it's gonna be it cuts across everything that a small business, big business have to do to stay in business.
And that's my big question. If you look at an SME, how do they deal with this? You know, what's your final advice to a small business who's good at what they do, but now they have to compete on these very complex tenders and procurement and sourcing and planning, and that's what the big corporate kind of expects from them. So you say collaboration is the one.
Collaboration is one, and be honest with yourself. Don't take on contracts which you are dubious as to whether you can actually do it or not. So always look for growth. That's very important. But don't overextend yourself, because if you make a big mistake, it's possible that your reputation will be gone for the rest of your existence.
That's asking a lot, isn't it, Alice? When you're young and you have a small business and your eyes are bigger than your capability, and that big thing comes along, you deal with those problems afterwards, the logistical issues, and your.
In fact, that's the downside of what we see in the country at the moment, because that's why roads are crumbling, for example.
I always joke and say, okay, so now that we've caught the bus as the dog, by, you know, chasing the bus, now we've got the bus. Now what are we going to do with it? Always a challenge.
Yeah. So you're saying one tip is
collaboration.
The other one is do what you really can.
Yeah.
Do what you can.
Be honest, basically.
Be honest. Work your strengths. Don't overextend yourself.
It's tough, because what we need is we need big corporate to come to the party here. Because that small business, if he or she had to be really honest with what they can achieve, then perhaps the big corporate is cutting up that tender into two big pieces. Yeah. The pieces are too big. It's not small enough for this guy to take it on. Mm-hmm. Now this guy needs to do it. I know this is a stretch, and I need to double my capacity or do whatever, but I have to go for it. But there's no really small contract. And that's what government is trying to do, to be very honest. With a lot of small black entrepreneurs, they are taking big tenders and they're cutting it up into very small ones. But the logistical challenges that brings and the problems is just indescribable.
Yeah.
But yet, they're trying to come to the party in all their weaknesses. Big corporate, I don't know that they have the time and the energy and
or the willpower.
Or the willpower or lots of things to actually come to the party when it gets to these issues. True.
So Hans, is there like a website, anything that people can go to learn more about these things we've discussed?
Just Google it, because that's what I do. I don't have a specific website that I go to. I Google whatever I need to know more about.
And then adapt it to your situation?
And I get 100,000 options to choose from.
Okay. That's Hans Kuhlman from representing USB Ed. It's really good to have you in the studio. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Your seat will now be taken by our SME owners for the next half hour. And thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. So next up, we have our SME showcase. So it's a business that attended the Box Shop launch on Friday, and we discussed it last week with Arthur Anderson. And this specific business was there. Alice was at the launch. We also wanted to go, couldn't make it, but we're excited. We'll touch on that for a moment now with Alice as well. And our SME feature today is JMK Tasty Foods, based in Soweto. And they were part of this whole launch. So we're going to chat to them for a few minutes. And, of course, the big question is, how are they doing with their procurement and their planning and their sourcing? When it comes to food, I think it plays a big role. So stay with us.
At Sibanye Gold, we've come to realize that there's nothing small about SMMEs, the small to medium-sized businesses that employ millions of people and pay billions in tax every year. Which is why we pride ourselves in providing support, leadership coaching, assistance and advice to help grow SMMEs.
You could say we're giving them a golden opportunity to grow. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.